a Radio 1 91 FM podcast.
Here are the R1 News at 1 headlines.
This is the R1 News Bulletin for Monday, the 20th of May. I'm Yana.
And I'm Jemima.
In international news, social media activism is at an all-time high with strong geopolitical conflicts happening in our world, namely the war between Israel and Hamas. TikTok is a free-to-download app that has over 1 billion monthly active users. Where there is a platform that encourages the creation of user-made content, comes an incredibly powerful way to spread awareness and garner attention about political movements and protests. What we have most recently seen is a surplus of students from universities in America, most notably Columbia University in New York, as well as Harvard, that are set up encampments in their campuses and use this as a form of protest to voice their displeasure by their institution's lack of support for Palestine in the war. Videos of these initial encampments were posted on TikTok for millions of people to watch, comment, and engage with in support for the cause. The traction that it gained encouraged more users to take advantage of the virtual connections that they were making with each other to bring about support for Palestine and make a mark on the internet. The next evolution of the Free Palestine movement is colloquially known as Blockout 2024, Operation Blockout, or Hashtag Blocked. 14 days ago, the 2024 Met Gala was held for celebrities and influencers to walk the red carpet, where not even two blocks away, protests over the war in Gaza were unfolding. The event displayed no support for any political agenda, despite the platform TikTok being a sponsor of the event. This saw to the beginning of the hashtag blocked movement. On May 6th, criticism from TikTok users arose after an influencer, Haley Khalil, who was invited to the event to make promotional content with E! News, posted a TikTok of herself wearing a lavishly adorned 18th century inspired dress. The video was staged with the influencer flaunting herself in an empty street, separate from the hundreds of everyday onlookers, watching from the barricades behind her, a very jarring image. Khalil was lip-syncing to the extracted audio from Sofia Coppola's 2006 film Marie Antoinette, proclaiming the words, "Let them eat cake." Given the humanitarian crises at large, social media users described the video as tone-deaf, as well as the Met Gala event being comparable to that of the Hunger Games, wherein affluent citizens dress in ostentatious clothing, whilst lesser, impoverished citizens suffer in their pleasure. Blockout became a movement when users decided it's time for a digital guillotine. It's time to block all the celebrities, influencers, and wealthy socialites who are not using their resources to help those in dire need. Whilst there is no organised list of celebrities who are being blocked, with some users offering suggestions and others deciding on their own, celebrities at the top of the chopping block include Zendaya, Lizzo, the Kardashians, Taylor Swift, and Justin Bieber. The aim of the blockout is to restrict engagement with the content these celebrities produce. With less people interacting, liking, and sharing the content, the blocking will affect views, engagement, and ultimately the paycheck that the celebrities rack up. The social media boycott hopes to redistribute celebrity-centric, capitalistic platforms. As the rallying creator who started the movement, Lady from the Outside, says, "We gave them their platforms. It's time to take back our likes, comments, and money." And at 1:30, we'll be joined by Dr. Sabrina Motto, a lecturer from the University of Otago who specialises in the study of celebrity behaviour, to talk more about the blockout movement.
New Caledonia is in a state of emergency, with ongoing clashes between Indigenous Kanak pro-independence protesters and security forces in Noumea since last Monday. One News reports there have been 6 deaths, and RNZ reports there have been hundreds injured, as well as riots, numerous fires, and looting. Last week, protests erupted over a constitutional amendment that will change who can participate in elections, allowing those who have resided in New Caledonia for an uninterrupted 10 years to vote. This has followed 3 closely spaced referendums on New Caledonia's autonomy from a French territory to its own independent nation. Pro-independence parties strongly oppose the amendment, saying it risks shrinking the political representation of Indigenous voices in local institutions, an RNZ explainer to the Unrest reports. Though in all referendums the majority have voted against independence, in early referendums the margins were within 10% between pro and against independence, and in the final referendum only had a 33% voter turnout, as it was held in 2020 during the height of COVID. The referendum has been labelled invalid by pro-independence parties as well as Melanesian leaders. the President of New Caledonia, Louis Mapo, as well as the FLNKS, the umbrella body for pro-independence political parties, are calling for calm.
In student news, last night was the annual inter-college cultural performance that was finally hosted at a venue large enough to seat whānau and families who travelled far and wide to see those who often are the first in their family to attend university and perform their cultures. The Regent Theatre opened their doors at 6:30, yet lines were already outside like it looked like the night just before heading into Brew Bar or Vault 21. Performances from the first-year colleges were arranged from here in Aotearoa to our neighbouring Pacific countries and also a trip to Asia and Europe along the way. It was a night that even this Australian news commentator could open up her heart to learn something along the way. Hours turned into days, days turned into weeks, and weeks turned into months of hard work, dedication and preparation to show off their cultures, communities, countries and colleges. The stage was the most formal that any cultural performance nights had seen in years past, which meant it became one of two remember. As the first cultural event underneath the new Ikoa of Otako Whakaihu Waka, a place of many firsts, the cultural event had its own firsts as well. The latest college of Te Whare Whakamaru o Te Rangi Hiroa, and not Te Rangi by short, had their maiden performance and was met with applause and cheers, followed by a hako tautoko of their kaimahi or staff. The University of Otago locals also stepped on stage for the first time and beautifully showed off what has been here in Otepoti all along, and even had Ruben Katibak, the senior warden of all the university-operated colleges, on stage to bring some of his own Filipino flair to the evening. Speaking with those who attended after the evening, yelling out who their favourites were, one noted, "It doesn't matter who was the best, as the real answer is all of them." A notable Māori Pacific College staff member who I had spoken with said, "This is one of the very few opportunities that you will see brown kids on stage with who their beings are in predominantly white, who are predominantly white in a white city like Dunedin. So this event is a highlight of every year. The cultural performance night may have been 4 hours long, but it was a night of celebration. If you missed the evening, you can watch it on YouTube on the Inter-College Competition Otago page."
A project mapping disabled students' experiences in tertiary institutions has found 60% had experienced exclusion or discrimination in their tertiary environments. Let's Get Accessible, a collaborative project between the National Students Disabled Association, NZQA, the Tertiary Education Commission, and the Ministry of Education, also found that 32% of disabled students found it difficult or impossible to ask tertiary staff for help, while another 20% said their learning environment was difficult to access. The report also found students experienced inconsistent levels of support, especially between disability services and the teaching staff, and this posed a significant barrier to their participation and success in education. Speaking to Critic Te Arohe, OUSA Welfare and Equity Rep Tara Shepherd commended the uni's external disability support staff. She also commented that certain conditions, often invisible or chronic, were not always considered by university staff. Tara also emphasised the knowledge of the Code of Pastoral Care, a document that outlines the basic rights of students across all of Aotearoa.
Stranger danger in the Studentville area as of recent has become increasingly problematic, especially for one flat on Great King Street who reported a peculiar perpetrator knocking on their door and let in under the assumption he was known to one of the boys. Critics contributor Adam Stitley was a correspondent for the incident that occurred. Introducing himself by the name of Strike, the intruder proceeded to have a yarn with the flatties. Sebastian, the flatty who let Strike into the house, has been copping a lot of shit for letting an ex-convict into their home on a peaceful Thursday evening, a school night nonetheless. After the flat realised that Strike was not a mate to anyone, they became increasingly alarmed of how to handle the situation. Strike, unfazed and stubbornly inserting himself in the boys' environment, gave them a nugget of wisdom in case they ever got into a situation like him. "To never assault a police officer, or they'll taser your asshole," he prolifically said. With that out of the way, what ensued was an unsolicited dropping of a mixtape from Strike, a series of shadowboxing moves and shirtless push-ups in the middle of the flat's lounge room. Ripping off his shirt and then showing the flat his shadowboxing skills, the boys were becoming weary of the situation they had found themselves in. By the time the shirtless rapping boxer had finished his demonstration, he had been at the flat for around an hour at that point. Sebastian was able to text a flatmate who had removed himself from the situation and told him to call police, but Strike had other plans. Police reported that the man initially refused to cooperate and decided to engage in a fight with the flatmates by declaring, "I'll leave when you leave." Who's going to tell him the boys literally live there? The police eventually got through to Strike and escorted him away from the property with no further issue, but the sentiment remains that students are being encouraged to keep their doors and windows locked in lieu of all these unprecedented break-ins. If you ever come into contact with someone similar to Strike, make sure you have a check-in with your flat before letting them in. Otherwise, you too might be subjected to an unsolicited mixtape rendition in your own living room.
Just an amendment to the piece about the unrest in New Caledonia. I reported that there was a 33% voter turnout in the latest referendum on New Caledonia's autonomy. That percentage was actually 44%. This has been the R1 News Bulletin for Monday, 20th of May. Today's bulletin was written by Yana Gleeson and Jemima Lorimer and read to you by Yana Gleeson and Jemima Lorimer.
Those were the headlines for today on R1 News at 1. Catch up on previous R1 News wherever you get your podcasts or head to r1.co.nz/news.
Welcome back to Radio 1 News at 1. We are back in the studio joined by Dr. Sabrina Morrow, a lecturer from the University of Otago, who specialises in the critical study of celebrity culture as it relates to social movements, to talk more about the blockout movement. So, hello Sabrina, how are you?
Very good. So nice to be here.
Yeah, it's we're all very excited to have you on because you've done lots of interviews in the past about things like this and you've earned a very nice doctor in status in front of your name, so it's very exciting. So, to start off the interview, I wanted to ask how you perceive the importance of the role that celebrities play in shaping public opinions, mostly on geopolitical issues like the conflict between Israel and Palestine.
Yeah, that's a really good question. So celebrities play a key role in shaping our attention. You know, they have a voice and a platform that often stem from their views and their visibility connected to other achievements that they might have that is not related to political issues. But a lot of them often are asked to take a stance or willingly take a stance on some issues that matters to them. Mm-hmm. And so there's a really long history of celebrities, you know, speaking out on issues that matters to them, whether it is at big events like the Academy Awards, for instance, in acceptance speeches. There's a really long tradition of having this kind of political stances, whether it is partnering with organizations as part of like campaigns where they become spokesperson. Mm-hmm. We've seen a lot of big events as well, raising funding for relief funding for various disaster or other events. So there is this long history of celebrities kind of, you know, gathering people, bringing people together around particular feelings, emotions, mm-hmm. And then kind of, you know, triggering those actions. So what is happening with blockout is not coming out of a vacuum, let's say.
It's always been like an issue that's been around, and I feel like now because everyone's on their phones, it's mm-hmm. very easy to get sucked into like this whole like doom scrolling thing is mm-hmm. a massive thing, and the amount of time that you spend on social media, you can be so easily influenced by celebrities and what they talk about. So I think, yeah, what you're saying is literally so true. So like, in lieu of that, I wanted to move forward with this, like, trend of, like, social media activism mm-hmm. and the way that it reports on worldwide protests, how it's created a sense of unification for activism. And one example of this could relate to the way that social media users are blocking, which is blocking celebrities, which is the blockout movement that we're referring to. And mostly because it's with users who don't feel that these celebrities mm-hmm. align with their own political views. Mm-hmm. And would you say that this is an effective or powerful movement, seeing as it's sort of subjective?
Mm-hmm. So I think the blockout movement is interesting for two reasons. The first one is that usually when social media are used, it will be bringing people together around a hashtag. So there's the kind of effective connections built around the hashtag, people coming together, using it and kind of spreading, you know, information about the next protest or sharing testimonies. We've seen that with hashtag Me Too. We've seen that with hashtag Black Lives Matter. So the Black Hat movement is kind of within that legacy of using online tools to organize. But what is really interesting about it is that it's using the tools of social media, which are not built for social media, for social movement organizing in the first place. They are organized to make money. They are commercial enterprises, right? Clicks and likes and engagement generate can be monetized and turn into actual funding, partnerships. This is how we have the rise of a special kind of celebrity, which are influencers, people who trade in reputation and in brand according to the image that they're building and the content that they put online. So what we're seeing with the Blackout is this convergence of two distinct uses of those same social media platform, and it's using the architecture of the social media platform against the celebrities, which I think is quite interesting and not new, but certainly not the mainstream ways in which social media have been used before. So just for our listeners who are not familiar with this, so Blackout, the movement is built around the idea of blocking celebrities rather than unfollowing them, with the idea that by blocking, you are preventing the celebrity, the influencers or the celebrities to engage with a broader audience, and therefore their engagement statistics, as they are built by the algorithm, prevents them from making further advertisement money. That's the idea behind it. Whereas unfollowing them, they could still show up on your Discover feed or other people's feed within your own followers or followings, and so therefore they would still be able to reap the metrics of that engagement. So not new, because we had seen similar forms of movement that used the architecture of social media to as a tool of protest. I'm thinking specifically in the case of Black Lives Matter, where we saw some influencers using the advertising options that YouTube as a platform afforded for them to put a lot of advertising content, and then that way reinvest the money they made from advertisement as donations. But here it's the target themselves is the celebrities, which I think is quite interesting, kind of flipping those tools on its head.
No, I actually like it, because when I first heard about this, I didn't think that a singular person who decided to block a celebrity was sort of going to make that much of an impact. But then I realized that because social media is such a massive place and people can jump on trends and people want to jump on trends, it actually creates like a drastic change in the way that celebrities get attention, because they're no longer making money if their content isn't being watched. So I actually was like, it dawned on me how much it can be so effective, when initially I actually didn't think it was going to. So I don't know. I thought that was, it has actually is a quite a big movement. So like going off from that, I wanted to know, in your opinion, does this whole movement of blocking celebrities on social media, does it impact the way that this, does it shift the way that people engage with celebrities? Or do you think that this being just a temporary trend, like sort of another thing to jump on, is sort of going to last? Do you think that it will stand the test of time, that people will continue on blocking or like having a certain view towards these now blocked celebrities? Or
I mean, obviously, I'm not a. I can't see the predict the future. But what I can see from previous instances of digital modes of activism online, or also forms of activism that involved celebrities, it often remains at the level of the trend. So, kind of a movement. We could think of as a flashpoint. To borrow the words of Sarah Bannett Weiser, who's a theorist. Let's not do a lecture on it. But so the idea is kind of moment of intense ignition around a specific issue that triggers forms of action that is important in and of itself, but it's not going to be long lasting, because it's all about virality. It's all about intensity of action, and it's ultimately, you know, a trade of brand and and reputation that is going to be short-lived. Yeah. So while we are in this movement, what matters is thinking about how can we use this moment of ignition to trigger forms of activism that are going to be long-lasting, especially as it relates, so blockout relates to denouncing the Israel assault on Gaza, right? So what kind of activism can we engage with that may come out of blockout, but that is going to be sustainable in order to answer and find some answers to these very complex issues, right? A ceasefire, asking our governments to take a stand, asking our employers and other people, brands and multinational corporations to support BDS, boycott, diverse, sanction, and you know, coming back to your first question about celebrities, like, they're important in orienting your gaze. Just last week, my colleagues and I had written an open letter asking this university to take a stance against the protests and student movements. And we did have some engagement from our local media campus, you know, local student media. Thank you so much for that. But no engagement with national media. And then the following week, flooded with interviews to talk about blockout, right? So that's also, I think, says a lot about the role of celebrity and perhaps that flame that will trigger some reactions. And then it's our job to, you know, use that for sustainable forms of political action.
I have a question. It's related to sort of what a lot of people are asking online to different influencers. Is, do you think celebrities and influencers have a sort of obligation to report and use their platforms to, because a lot of the argument and discourse on social media is about how, well, I'm not educated enough to report on this, and I do have a following, but I'm just an ordinary person. How am I supposed to know? But with this platform that they've been given, do you think that if they have some sort of, they need to use it in a sort of way to promote activism?
So I think that with visibility comes responsibility. That being said, I'm not asking celebrities to be expert on these issues, which are very complex, which myself, you know, I'm still educating myself on. But they have the resources, whether it is the time or the financial or the visibility as a form of capital resources in order to orient the gaze towards those whose actions, who have the expertise, who can bring about the change, right? So celebrities should not be taking a sense, you know, on things that they're not expert on, but rather use their visibility to shed lights on those who have that expertise. And this is also where I'm a bit skeptical of the longevity of a movement like Blockout in bringing sustainable change, because it's a simple answer, blocking a celebrity or not, to a very complex issue. And what we should be thinking about is, what are the complex answers that we need to think collectively to this complex issue?
Absolutely. No, I agree with that. I would say that's a pretty fair statement. This is sort of may not be in your area of expertise, but from your own perspective, what do you think would motivate individuals on social media to take actions against celebrities, like blocking them? And do you think that it could be a true reflection of the broader societal issues towards polarization and activism about like actually like taking your social media platform and putting a block on someone who doesn't align?
Right. So when I was hearing your question, I heard two things.
Yes,
the first part was related to how you opened this interview, which is we're on all our we are on our phones regularly and just kind of scrolling. And so being able to do something as simple as blocking or unblocking someone can feel really powerful and is a mode of kind of, again, building those affective connection, which, you know, bind people together. Although in and of themselves, they're not kind of, they're short action and they need to be more sustainable. So that's what I'm seeing about the idea of the flashpoint kind of triggering something. But what I'm also hearing in your question is perhaps something around polarization and cancel culture as a form of, as a symptom of polarization. So I think we're definitely living in a world that is quite polarized and that is stemming from a whole range of issues, including the fact that a lot of these debates are happening on those same social media platforms who are out there to make money, right? And they might seem like they're a democratic tool, but they're not. And so they're shaped by algorithms that will push certain content onto you based on what you've previously engaged with. Yep. So the very design of those architecture that we think is a democratic platform is actually not. Mm-hmm. And that increases the kind of polarization, echo chamber phenomenon, and all of that. Mm-hmm. But I also think that, you know, we're living in a moment with a form of intense push forward on key social issues that is also met with an intense backlash, right? Mm-hmm. And so that also further increases that forms of polarization, because if the places where we have those debates is those platforms that are shaped by pitting people against one another according to the way that they can make more money with the content that we engage, then that kind of just further increases the echo chamber and the polarizing effect.
Yes.
Yeah. Mm. I don't know that if that answers your question.
No, I think it did. Just one last question. In the future, looking forward, do you anticipate the relationships between celebrities, social media, and political activism among new generations, especially in the light of international traction that has come from social media activism, to affect things like the Israel-Palestine conflict? Or, like, how will this sort of different eras of activism on social media affect how people move forward with sort of expressing their political views and agendas and spreading word about activism?
So I think I would distinguish between the role of celebrity culture and the role of social media, which are very connected through this new figure of this new famous figure, which is the figure of the influencer. So, I mean, we've already seen since the Arab Spring in the early 2010s how important social media is in bringing people together and kind of facilitated forms of action. We've seen it with Black Lives Matter in its various iteration. We tend to remember Black Lives Matter as the summer of 2020, but actually it's been a movement that's been around for much longer and has been mostly, you know, as long as digital forms of activism, and has known many iterations and many moments of being into the limelight and then falling into the shadows and again. So we see from those other movements a kind of cyclical, but still using this to trigger and to maintain those ongoing debates and forms of solution building as well, which I think is really important. The role of celebrity culture, similarly, we've seen celebrities taking a stance on political issues for a really long time as well. So I think it was just going to increase. But I think that the danger that we might see is these moments then of being more and more immediate and more viral and less sustainable. And that's the point of caution that I would bring forward. So
Because trends start and trends end, so
exactly.
It depends on what sticks.
Yes.
Yeah. No.
And so to all of our listeners, I would encourage you to take a stance, to don't forget to write to your representative, to the government, attend protests as much as you can. There's a nationwide protest happening on Thursday at 12, if I'm not mistaken, 12 to 2. So, yes, all of these opportunities for you to do more than just blocking celebrities are really important.
I think that's a great note to end on. So thank you so much, Dr. Sabrina. This has been a lovely interview, and I hope that you have all the best luck for any interviews that you have in the future and all your research on celebrities in the future comings. So
thank you so much, Jana. Thank you for having me.
It has been great. Thank you very much, everyone, for listening, and this has been a Radio 1 interview with Dr. Sabrina Morrow.
That was a Radio 1 91 FM podcast. You can find more at r1.co.nz or wherever quality content is found.